Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Andrew Shatkin. Ladies and gentlemen, I bid you a very warm and hearty welcome to the Andrew Shatkin Block Talk Radio Show on every evening, generally at 8 o'clock, sometimes 6:30, sometimes 9:30, even 10 or 11. We are a show which we're honest. We are concerned with truth and honesty, and honest discernment, and intellectual honesty. We are concerned with critical thinking to reach facts and truth. We are not concerned with media hype, media falsehoods, or political rhetoric. I have had many shows of various factors and things that I like to talk about. Some of them are biblical, have a biblical orientation or a Christian orientation. Others have a political slant, and others have a literary slant. However, they all share this one thing, that I love literature, I love books, and I love the Bible and God's holy word, and I take it with utmost seriousness and thinking when it is presented to me. And I am very much concerned with political truth. And this political truth, I follow Christ in his concern for the poor and underclass. And even though I'm generally a political conservative. However, let me give you some little insights into my thinking before we begin this show. Now, this show is going to be concerned with the commandment of Jesus, a very difficult commandment. Very demanding commandment of love yourself, neighbor as yourself. It is the beginning point of Jesus' message to humanity, and he had other messages which went even further. Love your enemies. Love those that persecute you. Things like that. He even took the love that he talked about, loving your neighbor as yourself, even further, loving your enemies, loving those who persecute you. He said that anger is the same as murder. He said that locating one with lust is the same as adultery. These are very demanding commandments, and I'm going to consider his particular commandment, which is obviously extremely significant in commandment, or command, loving your neighbor as yourself. It is the essence of Jesus' message. It is what makes him the Son of God, and what he says, it comes from the mind of God. Now, I'm going to talk, this is the politically incorrect show. We don't go in for political correctness. As I say, we go in for truth. We don't endorse the big lie, which George Orwell exposed in 1984 and Ray Bradbury exposed in Fahrenheit 451. We don't endorse the big lie. We're not interested in political rhetoric, media lies, or media falsehoods. We're interested in intellectual honesty and honest discernment and getting at the facts and getting at the truth. Second, this is a Christian show, an orientation, and in this show, I present the Christian point of view. But let me say this, that I welcome all people to this show, whether of all races and religions, whether Hindu or Muslim or Shinto or African, folk religion, whatever the religion is, we welcome this to this show because I see in every religion the face of the love of Christ, which is really what I'm concerned with. Now, I want you to know that many other religions visit us, visit my show, particularly Muslims. Many Muslims from Middle East visit my show, as do Hindus and other religions. But let me say this, that as a Christian, I follow the full authority of Holy Scripture from beginning to end, from Genesis to Revelation. And I also follow the creeds of the Church, Athanasian, Apostles, and Nicene Creed. And if I read books, I read great Christian books, such as John Bunyan's Pilgrim Progress, C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity, T.S. Eliot, Augustine, the Epistles of Paul, which are the greatest thinking of a religious thinker that I can think of. And, of course, John Milton, who in Paradise Lost, written while he was blind, mind you, he designated and understood the fall of man into sin was a critical point in human history. He saw it, he reported it in the epic poem Paradise Lost, and he also wrote another epic poem, Paradise Regained, and Samson Agonistes, a Greek drama based on the Book of Judges. And Paradise Regained was another epic that he wrote. And I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, the power of his mind was so great that he was able to write these epic poems and dramas with all blind and unable to see. That's how he did this. I know the strength of his mind and will that enabled him to do this. In addition to my Christian belief, I run two radio shows, a blog talk radio show and podcast show. Both have visitors from all over worldwide, and the podcast show has over 4,300 visitors. And my radio blog talk show has had many visitors from the Middle East, particularly, I'm proud to say, from Saudi Arabia. I have a Muslim friend in Iran, a philosophy student, who was very enamored of my Christian books, which indicates to me the intellect of these people. They are not limited to their background. They're ready to look into other things, which is what an intelligent person generally does. He takes up the idea and determines its validity and truth, doesn't reject it because he doesn't believe in it on the surface. So I'm going to tell you this. I'm an author. I've written 10 books, Christian books and legal books. The legal books of Select Legal Topics, Volume 1 and 2, and the Christian books of An Essay in the Quorum Room, Essays on Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy. I wrote a book on the parables, my interpretation of the 41 parables. Let me stress, the parables of Jesus are his last words on an advice to humanity. The thought and words of Christ in the parables is so valuable that we cannot read them often enough and thoroughly enough to get a handle on what the Son of God is saying in these parables. There's 41 of them. I interpret them in this book, and I hope that you read the parables, most important, and that perhaps you may read the book or any of these books I've written. Let me tell you that I have written two legal books, Select Legal Topics, Volume 1 and 2. I've also written a book on the parables. I've recently written a book on the Psalms, my interpretation of 150 Psalms. The Psalms are the great spiritual thought of God as he communicates to us in Jewish lyric poetry. I read the Psalms in seminary in Hebrew, and I memorized the 1st, 2nd, and 23rd Psalm in Sunday school. The Psalm, their greatness as literature is undoubted, but moreover, their greatness in thinking and in spiritual depth is even more undoubted. Not to read the Psalms is to miss out terribly on God's message to us in the Hebrew Bible. I challenge you, ladies and gentlemen, which you will tire of more easily, War and Peace in a translation, Crime and Punishment in translation, or the Psalms in an English translation. I can guarantee you the Psalms will outlast any other book in its power, in any language, which God and the Son of God communicates to you in these 150 Psalms. John Donne said of the Psalms that they were the manna of the church. He knew what he was talking about. Anybody who hasn't read John Donne's poetry or sermons, I say, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, has again missed out or missed the boat. Now reading the Psalms is missing the boat. However, I'm writing other books. I've written four blog books on my blogs, literary, philosophical, theological, and legal. And I've written 4 books on these blogs, which will soon be published. And I also have written a book. I'm preparing to write a book on the miracles in the Bible. I've written part of that book. I'm preparing to write a law book on criminal law hearings and criminal law hearings. I'm preparing to write a book on that. I've written part of it. I'm preparing to write a book on the book of Job, which is a very great book in the Bible. It was the story of an Edomite, not Jewish man, that was tried and tribulated by God in his actions. Job was a great book. It's a wonderful book, and I advise you to read it. Ladies and gentlemen, and do not have your children miss out in what I am talking about. Don't let them make fools of your children in this society. Show them Job. Read to them Job. Get into the Psalms with them. Get into the epistles of Paul with them. Get into the great thinkers of the past and present. There is no escape from the greatness of the great thinkers of the past, whether Milton, whether Tolstoy, whether John Bunyan, whether Augustine, or St. Paul. In addition to my book of Job, I've written other books, Res Gestae, a book on evidence, chapter on evidence, and Bender's Consolidated Evidence, an encyclopedia article in New York Jurisprudence on criminal law, and I've also written the chapter on paternity in New York Family Law and Practice. As I said, I enjoy writing. To me, writing books is a pleasure because it communicates my inmost and deep thoughts. And I don't think that a television show is any replacement or a movie for a great book or any book of any kind. Books are the avenue to thought and knowledge. When people do not read books, they enter into a society of darkness and ignorance. People who don't read books are in darkness and ignorance. They may not know it, but they are, and if our society continues in that direction, the entire society will descend into a kingdom of darkness run by Satan and based on the big lie defined by George Orwell and Ray Bradbury. That will be the future without books. Now, I've written 3 very extensive law review articles, an article on the Syracuse Law Review on criminal procedure, and I bought by the State Department and the United States Supreme Court. I've also written a book on two articles on Academicus, an Albanian scientific journal on sexual orientation discrimination and the United States educational system. I have nothing against our gay brothers and sisters. They have a legal right to live their life and behavior as they wish, but I part ways in their moral choice. That's all. I don't hate them. I'm not prejudiced against them. I don't dislike them. I merely disagree with them on a moral basis, and that's all. I don't think they should be persecuted. I don't think they should be subject to hatred, or that anybody should be persecuted. And I've also written an article in Academicus, the Albanian Scientific Journal, on the failure of the educational system in the United States. Unless something is done our educational system, our children will be further brought down into darkness and ignorance. If that's what you want for your kids, that's fine, ladies and gentlemen. That's your choice, that's their choice. As I said to someone in Martha's Country Bakery, the people who don't read books and don't know these great authors and don't have this knowledge, they are in a state of darkness and ignorance, and they will participate in a life and descent into darkness. If you want your children to live in darkness, then you will not have them read books or go to the library or read Orwell or read Bradbury or read Milton or read Bunyan or read Tolstoy or read Dostoevsky or read Gogol or read any of these people. You will not have them. They will not know about them. They will be in a state of intellectual deprivation, and we cast into darkness, and we'll cast our entire society into darkness. That's what you want for your kids? And if your kids want that choice, that's fine. be aware that that choice brings about a descent into darkness and ignorance. That's the choice you're making? That's fine. Now, I want to talk about one of Jesus' most difficult commandments, loving your neighbor as yourself. He also said love your enemies. He also said love those, pray for those that persecute you and love them. He also said anger is the same as murder, and that looking at a woman with lust is the same as adultery. These are very demanding commands, teachings by Jesus. One of the most thought-provoking commandments is found in the saying of Jesus in Matthew chapter 19, where he says, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Very demanding, very difficult. I'll talk about this in a minute. Again in chapter 22, verses 37 to 39, Jesus says, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. In verse 38, he says, this is the first and great commandment. And the verse 39, he says, and the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as yourself. In verse 40 of the 22nd chapter of Matthew, Jesus was said to have noted, on these two commandments depend all the law and prophets. So, here, what are we going to make of this? Jesus says you have to love your... How can we love anybody? Is it an emotional love? What kind of love is this, loving your neighbor? You don't even know him. How can you love him? It's a mystery. And then loving the God with all your heart and all your mind. How can you do that? You don't even see God. So it's a mystery how Jesus can make these demands and tell us to do this. And what does he mean by love? What is this understanding of love? Is it emotional? Is it erotic? Is it love of a parent? Just what kind of love is this? Huh? What is he talking about? Again, Mark quotes Jesus saying in chapter 12, verse 30, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. And in verse 31, Jesus is quoted as saying, the second is like, namely this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There is none other commandment greater than these. First of all, we have to understand what Jesus means with love. Does he really mean we should love this person? How can we have that? How can we dredge up that emotion without a relationship? How can we love someone we don't even know? That's the first thing. What kind of love is this? Is it erotic? Is it emotional? Is it intellectual? What sort of love is this? Perhaps he means that we should respect and treat our neighbor as ourselves. We should give him the same consideration, possibly. That might be the interpretation. We should give him the understanding and the consideration that he deserves. And also, what does he mean by our neighbor? Who is our neighbor? I only know a few people who live near me. I don't know most people. So how can we love someone we don't even know? And who is this neighbor? What he means, what Jesus means by neighbor is, he means everyone we encounter or will encounter or do encounter. So what does he mean by this, our neighbor? Apparently he means the people that we encounter. And he's told us we have to love them as much as we love ourselves. And what he means by here, this, is our neighbor is anyone we may have contact with or even not have contact with, and we have to love them as we love ourselves. Is he telling us to love of self? Does he mean we should love ourselves? Probably the meaning of the saying is that we should treat our neighbor with the same respect and consideration with which we regard ourselves. So what Jesus seems to mean by this is that we should show our neighbor the same respect and treat our neighbor with the same respect and consideration with which we regard ourselves. It doesn't mean we should love ourselves. It means that we should regard ourselves with the same consideration and give that consideration to our neighbor. So this is the problem with who is our neighbor and what kind of love is this? How are we to understand love when it seems to be not erotic, doesn't seem to be emotional, It seems to be more like respect and consideration. And the second observation about these commandments of loving the Lord thy God and loving your neighbor is the fact that it is a commandment. He's commanding this. It would appear that the love of our neighbor does not come easily to us. I was on my other phone. I'll call you back.
Okay.
Bye-bye. So what are we to understand? Another thing we have to command that is the command. This is a command, and therefore it does not come easily to us. That's why it is commanded, this love. It's very hard to understand what this love means. I think it could be interpreted as giving people the same respect and consideration and their due as we give ourselves, but it doesn't come easily to us, and so it is commanded that we do this. And it's very difficult to follow this command, but how can we love someone we may barely know or understand, so-called our neighbor? How are we to understand what this love is and how it works and how we can do it? It's hard enough to love your parents. It's hard enough to love your spouse. It's hard enough to love anybody other than yourself. But to love your neighbor, anybody, in any place, is very difficult. And the reason why it's commanded, because our fallen human nature posits, involves self-love and self-centeredness. So that's why he commands it, because he knows that our fallen human nature posits and involves self-love and self-centeredness, as opposed to love of our neighbor, whom we may not know at all, be indifferent to, or not care about. That's why it's commanded, because our human nature involves self-love and self-centeredness, and we can't really love our neighbor knowing that we may not know him at all, and we may not really care about him or be indifferent to him. The commandment and its exception is extremely difficult and challenging command for human nature to fulfill, which is self-centered and self-love. Still, it is commanded, and Christians who follow Christ are told they must follow this commandment of showing charity and love to all who may pass us in our life. Jesus tells us that we have to follow this command, even though it doesn't come easily to us, by showing love to all who may be passed by. To love our neighbor as ourselves is perhaps impossibly difficult, and most people can only halfway do it and accomplish it. The issue is, what is this love? What is the nature of it? Who is our neighbor? And how are we going to do it? And why it is commanded? It is commanded because our human nature resists it. The third and most shocking aspect of this commandment is that Jesus tells us to love our neighbor as ourselves. It doesn't mean we should love ourselves. I don't think he means by that. But he does mean that we should give our neighbor the same respect that we give ourselves. He tells us to do it. We're not going to get anything in return. And the commandment is most difficult to fulfill, is most human beings look for reciprocity and connection in their relationship. So how are we going to love our neighbor when we have no relationship with him in the first place? Jesus tells us to love our neighbor as ourselves. He does not tell us that our neighbor will love us back. That's noteworthy. He doesn't say that. He merely tells us to do it. We expect nothing in return. Again, the commandment is very difficult to fulfill. It's most human beings look for reciprocity and connection in their relationships, and most are driven by self-centeredness and self-love. Some, this is a commandment we are taught to fulfill, and many, if not, as much as we may love our neighbor, there is a good, if not even chance, that we will receive no love in return. This is the gospel, and this is the commandment of the Savior of the world. I think I may go through this again tomorrow night, because I'm hitting so many points here that are demanding and thoughtful. The question is, how are we going to love someone we barely know? Who is our neighbor? How can we, as self-centered, self-loving creatures, fulfill this commandment? Why? And for that reason, it is commanded. He doesn't tell us, moreover, Jesus doesn't tell us our neighbor will love us back or anybody will love us back. He chose us to do it, expecting nothing in return. Again, this commandment is most difficult to fulfill. Most human beings look for connection in their relationships. This is a command we are taught to fulfill and commanded to fulfill, and that's the way it is. He commands it because we know that our neighbor may not love us back, or anybody may not love us back. He chose us to do it, expecting nothing in return. This commandment, as I said, is the most difficult to fulfill, so most human beings look for connection in their relationship and a response. This is a commandment we are commanded to fulfill, and the irony of it is that as much as we love our neighbor and give love to our neighbor, there's good and even chance we will receive no love in return. This is the gospel and the commandment of the Savior and Redeemer of the world. I hope that you've enjoyed this little talk. I hope I've clarified something, what neighbor is, what the love is, and various aspects of this, that it's a command, and why it's so difficult to fulfill, and the various things I discussed. It's found on page 69 and 70 of my book, my interpretation of the words, love your neighbor as yourself. And I hope you've enjoyed this little talk tonight, and I hope I've given you some pointers as to the understanding of Jesus' words in this respect. It's always difficult to grasp the words of grasp and understand the words of the Son of God. Extremely difficult because his thinking is not human. And when you're thinking, when you're dealing with God's thinking and with Christ's thinking, you are commanded and to be cautious and thorough and understanding, attempt to understand what he is saying. Thanks very much. Good night.